Started recording everybody. Right, so
Perfect.
now you all know. So before Bob and I get into it, we just a quick bit of housekeeping. There's quite a few of us and there's more joining. So you got two things, two ways to participate. We've got the chat and the Q&A. The chat at the moment, people are jumping in and saying, hi, my name is whatever, and where you're from. It's always fun to see where people are from. The Q&A, so what's going to happen? Bob and I, we're going to go back and forth and really dig deep into the whole AI thing for, hey, up to 60 minutes, all right?
Yep.
And then a little bit before the top of the hour, we are going to open it up for Q&A, all right? And we'll just hang around for, if it takes another 30 minutes, we'll be here for another 30 minutes answering questions. So at any time over the next 60 minutes, if a question jumps to mind, put it in, not the chat, but put it in the Q&A. And then when we hit 60 minutes, we'll hand over and Jody is going to go through those and feed them to me and Bob, and we'll go into the whole Q&A thing. All right. I saw a definition of bucolic come up, but I must not be distracted. All right. So say who you are in chat. If you've got questions you want us to address at the end, put them in Q&A and we will talk about those in about 60 minutes. So we're recording. Let's get Jody, have I forgotten anything, do you think?
I think you covered it.
I think I covered it. All right, good stuff. Okay, Bob, you get the first swing.
So I don't know if you saw John Ford's Copywriters Roundtable newsletter today. He
I
had
did
a
not.
quote at the top of it that I'd never heard before, and it was Einstein. And Einstein said, "I fear the day when technology overlaps with our humanity. The world will only have then a generation of idiots." So that's part of my worry. Forget about for a second, which we're going to discuss. Is it good? Is it bad for copywriters? How to use it the right way, the wrong way? Isn't this just terrible? Why? I mean, if you think about it, our humanity is thinking. And if we abdicate or outsource thinking, isn't Einstein right? We're just going to be a bunch of drones and sludges.
I think we get to choose. I totally understand where you're coming from, and there's part of me that is very uncomfortable with that because as a writer, if I want to write my best work, I have to start by thinking by myself in a way, and I have to start with a blank page, and I think as I write and I improve as I'm thinking and writing. If I have an automated system that takes me the first few paces, I kind of miss that first bit, and is something lost? Probably. So yeah, it's a real thing, and it's a bit like when the calculator came out. I'm old enough that when I was at school, we didn't use calculators. We had slide rules, but mostly we did mental arithmetic because that's what
Me
we were
too.
taught.
We had slide rules.
Right, and with mental arithmetic, you exercise that part of your brain, not very well in my case, that does. So now we could be in that same thing, of oh my goodness, if I don't have to write and I can just ask one of these models to do it for me, then are we losing that kind of plasticity? Are we losing, we're no longer building those neural networks to make us good at writing. And if we can't write, then I'm not sure we can think as well. That said, I think we have a choice. I think we can choose to use these tools in a different way. So I'm aware of this. I don't want that to happen to my brain. I want to keep using my ability to think and write. And sometimes, I really like to pick up a pen and pencil and a piece of paper. So I get that connection, that body, pen, paper, brain connection. But I can still use these tools to enormous benefit to myself. And I can use them in ways that don't diminish my own capacity as a writer, but actually can work to improve my work as a writer. And I've seen that happen. I've seen my work improve through collaborating, as it were, with some of these models.
So you said, and I think it was an email to your list or to me, you said the next version, which is now out, you said just around the corner a week ago, now it's out, will be a whole lot more powerful. In other words, it will be both a stronger tool for copywriters and content writers and a greater threat. Why a threat? Because some clients will try this new version and decide it is now good enough to replace some of their writers. So let me stop there because you said more. Shouldn't all copywriters be wetting their diapers and running and screaming with an axe to destroy this machine that's going to replace them?
There'll probably be some people jumping and screaming. To clarify, what came out on Monday was not like GPT 4.5 or GPT 5. So it wasn't like the next model. It was actually just it was GPT 4.0 only,
Oh, right.
which is basically about being multimodal, voice, video, text. So it was really interesting, but it wasn't that big next step. The big next step, it depends. I think it depends on how you look at it. If you are in victim mode and say, "Oh my goodness, this thing is going to slaughter us," and you just sit back and wait for it, it will, because these early models are pretty good at writing compared to 3 years ago. And if you wait for the next one, which will be better, and you think, "Oh my goodness, I'm done," you probably are if that's your mindset. If, on the other hand, you have a mindset of saying, "Hey, now there's something even more powerful I can leverage to improve not only how I research, how I do my brainstorming, how I do my structuring, how I even do some of my writing," but it's like I've used it as like a business advisor, almost as like a coach, saying, I've asked it numerous times in different ways, like, and I'm talking about GPT-4 usually. I say, "Hey, you know my skill set, because I've asked it to remember stuff about me. You know who I am, what I do, my skill set. What do you think my opportunities are over the next 5 years?" And I said, "Look, I'm worried about this as much as any writer. How can I mitigate that risk?" And it comes out with a whole bunch of suggestions, like being more strategic, being a consultant, being an advisor. Or something I wrote about yesterday is the other thing that worries me about this is, and it goes a bit to your point, Bob, of like, should we be scared of this if it's automating everything? There are tools out there that I'm seeing, like where agencies are basically using systems where every writer in the agency or in the creative department of the company is required to use this same system. And I fear that it will create work that is okay, but ultimately mediocre. So I asked a question in my latest blog post, where's the creative director? Because in my early days, when I worked at ad agencies, the creative director was the arbiter of is there an excellence here that we want to put our name to? Is it good enough? And it was a very, very high standard. Today, that creative director role is somewhat diminished anyway, but it doesn't seem to exist within the workflow with artificial intelligence. So I have like maybe everyone here is expecting me to be diametrically opposed to what Bob thinks. We're actually fairly close. I'm probably more engaged with AI, and I probably use it more, and I probably have more optimism about it. But when Bob raises these questions, I'm aware, and I'm as concerned as anyone. But I do think we have this choice if we lean into it and really use it. Hey, you can be, there's a whole new job description, creative director in the AI workflow. So, dear company, are you worried? Because you should be worried about a mediocre output from these tools. What you need is me. One way or another, consulting, working in-house, freelancing, whatever. I will be your creative director. I will ensure that there is creative excellence, that you're on brand, that there's no mediocrity, that you don't sound the same as everyone else.
So, are you working with clients or have other copywriters that you've trained to work with clients in that capacity? And is that the language they use, or that's just you're giving an example?
That's just me giving an example, because I'm constantly looking at like what if our role as, hey, I'm a content writer, feels vulnerable because some of these models do a pretty good job at content writing, and the new models will be even better, then maybe you need to pivot a little. And again, this is something that I've talked to a lot with copywriters is that we've got to be a little bit agile, as they say right now, because this really is a fundamental. It's a transformational technology. All right. This is like what happened to the candle makers when Edison came up with the electric light bulb. Is we don't like it, but there's nothing we can do about it. It's coming. So we have to find ways to pivot. We have to find a different market for a different kind of candle, as it were. Or we have to say, you know what, I'm gonna work with electricity myself. So it's interesting times. And it's not like they don't have superpowers. They're extraordinary in many ways, these models, but they lack stuff. Like they lack human empathy. They lack human emotion. They lack emotional intelligence. They lack any kind of sensory experience. They've never walked on the beach and felt the sand between their toes. They never heard the cry of a seagull above their head or the crash of the waves on the beach. So there are limits to what they do, and it's in fact the very human parts of ourselves we can use to add value and to differentiate our work.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I would, if you were, I think of you as sort of a pro AI person, and you said they don't, the AI ChatGPT doesn't know what it's like to have sand between the toes. I would expect a hardcore AI person to say it doesn't matter. That already exists out there, and they're going to collate that and curate that and put it into a piece of writing. So does it in fact matter that what AI does or ChatGPT did? He does, it's actually never done itself. It's not original. It's all taken from stuff humans have already written versus what you and I can do, where we have the basis, the starting point of genuine human emotion and experience.
Right. I think that makes a difference. I think these models do a remarkable job. Like if when I think about it, when I see some of that, sometimes I will put in a piece of my own writing and I'll say, you know what, I'm not happy. There's a transition not working. I can't spot it, but there's something I'm not happy with. And I'll put it into one of these models and say, find out where the problem is. And some doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. And I'm like, man, it's like having a really good assistant, writing assistant with me. So it's remarkable in many regards, and I've like trained by carefully, working with prompts to really get some of these models to create good output. But there is a limit. They don't have that sensory experience. They don't have a memory of being at school or college and having a beer with friends or coffee, or they don't have any. They've read about it. They've seen a video clip about it, but they've never felt it. And you do see that. You did. There is a limit. Now, not every piece of writing you do requires that. If I'm writing a blog post on how to clean your coffee maker,
Exactly what I was going to say, but go on.
it really doesn't need that emotional nuance. You can actually throw it in about feelings of frustration or the taste of yuck when you realize you haven't washed your coffee maker in 6 months. But so I can throw in some story and some personal experience. But sometimes things are just, okay, just tell me what to do. And it can do that stuff fine. But if I'm talking about something that is actually going to touch me emotionally, hey, Bob, you know as well as I do that emotion is probably the most powerful element in any kind of marketing writing. Is touch someone emotionally and you're kind of 9/10 of the way there. Like they're engaged, they're paying attention, they're more likely to convert if you reach them emotionally. These models can do that in a kind of blunt way because they've read about it. They've read Love Story, they've read Romeo and Juliet. They can write a sonnet about love if you ask them, but they've never really felt it. And it does. And you, like I've done a demo of where I was working with something and I did different stages of prompting. So a sequence of prompts to try and get the output better and better. And at one point I said, okay, let's open with a little story, a little anecdote. And it did. And it was great, but it was kind of, but I actually realized I had a very similar story myself. So I rewrote the beginning with my own story coming from me, flesh and blood. And then I made some tweaks further down in the copy. So what happened is the model got me so far, and then I added in that emotional element, or what I'm constantly talking about is applying emotional intelligence to the AI output to make it better and also to differentiate it.
Now you have a diagnostic tool that helps determine how to put emotional intelligence in copy. You showed it to me. It was that grid. What was the name of it?
Oh, you're talking about the four domains of emotional intelligence?
Yeah.
Right. So if you were talking about emotional intelligence, and I find this field fascinating because everyone thinks they're emotionally intelligent, but generally we're not. So the first domain is self-awareness. Are you aware of your own emotions? Which we think we are. But I might get a little bit angry with Bob, and he says, Nick, don't get so angry. And I'm going to say, I'm not angry. We've all been there. I'm not angry. I actually am. But he noticed it before I did. So sometimes we're not aware. So emotional intelligence, like self-awareness, is really important. Self-management is I go into my teenager's bedroom and the place is a dump and I've asked him 10 times to clean it and I find myself about to get angry. And then I pause, I control it, I manage that emotion because I remember the last 10 times I followed that route, it didn't work out so well. So I kind of take a breath and step back. I think as copywriters, the most important one, though, is the third domain, which is social awareness, is where we are aware of and respectful of other people's emotions. Like we're showing empathy. And if you ask 100 people if they're empathetic, 99 will say yes. And in fact, probably less than 50 really are. We're not very good at empathizing with other people, particularly if that other person disagrees with us. It's very hard to be empathetic. But that's part of emotional intelligence. And this is really what it means to be a, this is being human. You know, emotional intelligence is being human. And this is what differentiates us from the machines. The machines are great, but they're not human. And there is a difference. And there's also a difference in how I relate to my clients and prospects. Do
How so?
I want my prospecting email to prospective clients be written by AI? No, I don't.
Well,
Because
that's
it's
interesting
not.
you said that, because I don't know if you probably don't get it, but I get the MIT Magazine Digital Review, and they had an article in there. Let me just read it to you. According to an article in MIT Technology Review, a digital marketing agency called Sleed has developed a tool that generates personalized LinkedIn posts using AI for its clients. And the first thing I thought is, you need an AI to make a LinkedIn post? To me, it seems ridiculous.
Yeah, you see, I would like I say I'm a fan of AI, but I would never do that. I would never do that. And one of the reasons is that, well, one is just plain lazy, and the other is people will notice, and they'll notice because your posts begin to sound like everyone else's posts who are using the same tool. Now, I also read something recently, and again, it's a service for agencies where all the writers and no, for companies, all the writers in the company join up and they sign up as a team and they use the same prompt library, the same template library, the
Right.
same model, and inevitably everything's going to start sounding the same. And as you and I know, Bob, as marketers, sounding the same is the last thing you want. So I'm not a fan of AI to like blinded, you know, blindfolded by it. I get the downside and I'm careful. And I never anything where I'm writing to, if I'm writing my newsletter, it's always me. If I'm writing on LinkedIn or Twitter, it's always just me. I use AI a lot, but not when the voice is meant to be my own. And there are
Wait, let
places
me
like
ask a question
on.
because I know less than you do, but don't you guys who are AI fans train the AI to have your voice? So why does that matter?
Because it means I actually become disengaged. It's like the difference between mental arithmetic and the calculator. If I'm just pumping out automated LinkedIn, I'm losing that engagement. I'm not putting in the effort. I'm not putting in the work to engage with an audience. And that makes a difference to me because I'm in lean back mode now because I don't have to do it. I can go out and go for a walk because it's all taken care of automatically. But sometimes when I put out something on LinkedIn or Facebook or something, it's spontaneous. I thought about it 5 minutes before. It's not automated. It's not scheduled. It's like too much automation is never. Anyway, look, Bob, I think it's time you came clean and tell us about how you use AI. Like, what ways do you use it, and what place do you stop and stop, you know, stop using it?
So I have only, not a big AI user. I could see that maybe I would use it more, but one thing here's what I use it for. When we're writing direct response copy, and a lot of people on this call, I could name some of them, but are direct response copywriters, like you and I are.
Right.
And in direct response copy, there's a type of promotion called the big idea. For example, in a financial promotion, what would happen if Putin dumped plutonium in the water supply or cut off the gas supply to the rest of the world? Whatever the idea is, would that make a good direct mail package? Or a VSL, a video sales letter, for promoting a new a financial and investment newsletter. So how do I know whether that would work? The idea occurs to me. I put it in AI. I say, what would be the consequences of Putin dumping isotopes of radioactivity, in the gas lines or the water supply? And then I watch for the reply. And I'm not using it to write copy, but I call it idea vetting, VETTING.
Right.
Yeah, and that's my main application. Does the idea that I think is a good idea have enough legs to stand on, that it's strong enough that I could go ahead with confidence and write research and write the promotion on my own? But I want to, give it a check before I go ahead and do that. And that has been very useful to me in both consumer, big idea, direct response, and even in some B2B things. So I use it mainly for
That's
IQ.
that's pretty amazing, eh? When you think about it.
Yeah, it's very comforting too.
Yeah, I haven't done that idea vetting. I have in terms of, like, if I'm writing content for a project website, I'll sometimes say, hey, here are the top 10 posts that I wrote over the last little while. Based on this, the interest that you see expressed in these headlines, show me another 10. And it does. It shows me another 10 topic ideas that are related to the successful topics that I've written about.
I get
And
that. What do
usually
you
that list is pretty disappointing. So then I'll do next step, and which I'll actually often turn into the first step, is I'll say, give me 10 non-obvious ideas. And it really gets it, the non-obvious. If I say non-obvious, it really understands what I mean,
have to
which
try
and
that.
it's really weird. So yeah, that I come up with, I haven't used it exactly the way you do, like say a big idea, what do you think? But I certainly ask its opinion on content and whether it they think, you know, I think it they think it appeal. One of the things I wanted to say to, I guess, everybody, and some people are already here and they're probably ahead of both of us, some people listening, but when it comes to prompting, I know that some people who are disappointed in this technology, that they'll put in a few 5, 10-word prompts and the output is disappointing, and they'll go, huh, just as I thought, this is not very good. I would encourage you to try harder. It's a bit
To
like
try what?
try harder. It's a bit like a. I was listening this morning to one of my favorite musicians, guitarists, Dave Gilmour of Pink Floyd. Just remarkable. Put a guitar in his hand, and the music is just beautiful to my ears, to my mind. If I pick up a guitar, it's excruciating. Because I haven't practiced that instrument. I don't. Well, one, I don't have his talent, but I haven't practiced. I haven't put in the hours. And I encourage people to think of these models not as a software tool, like you would with, like a simple piece of software, but as an instrument that you need to learn to play. So practice,
I
practice,
love that.
practice.
I would not have
And the
thought of
more the
that.
practice, it's like with a guitar, the more you practice, the better the output. And in my experience, it's exactly the same with these models. The more you practice and work at it, the more experience you have, the better the output.
And you also have to maintain the practice, as with an
Yeah.
instrument, or you
Yeah.
get, or you're not good at it.
Yeah, I practice every day on prompting. Now, people call it prompt engineering, which I find irritates me.
Well, I was going to say about the term. Perry
Yeah.
Marshall and I are engineers, and we'll tell you, you're not engineers. We
Yeah,
don't know
yeah.
quite what you are, but you're not engineers.
I
So
know, I know.
I
I
think
beg
the
your pardon.
practice is good. They should find another name.
Hey, so Bob, I'm gonna throw a lefty at you here. A while back, and it's quite a while back, I was putting on LinkedIn stuff about how I was, I was talking about, hey, people, heads up, because if you don't pay attention, if you don't lean into AI, it could bite you on the butt. And you were almost like, Nick, stop saying stuff like this. You're scaring people. Those weren't your exact words.
That's what there was were my exact words.
All right. So explain that. Why did you want me to stop telling people?
I think, well, here's, first of all, this comes from, I don't think this is from you. I asked another, one of our colleagues, I'm not going to name, and then I'll answer the question. I said, people like Nick and other people, I think they're scaring people that they're selling programs on how to do ChatGPT and prompting by saying, if you're a regular copywriter, you got to learn this. Other people are saying more severely than you, if all you do is write copy by hand, you're doomed. You're out of the loop. But here is from a top copywriter. He says that I think, I asked him about this. I won't name him. I think that a year or five from now, you'll see human written writing increase in value, not decrease. First, because, and I could be wrong, I don't think AI will ever get the randomness or serendipity of human imagination quite right. And second, the fact that won't, that folks will tend who use ChatGPT will lean on it harder than they should. You're talking about it as a partner, but you lean on it harder than they should to do all their work. And it's like if you, if you if you have a weight machine in the gym rather than free weights, you still get an exercise. But if you hook up a motor to the weight machine and it's lifting the weight for you, yeah, it's getting done, but your muscle's getting weak.
It's like that. What were those things called? Player pianos? You know, the pianos, the
You
automatic pianos.
put paper in them and they would
Yeah.
play the keys automatically.
So a player piano does that. It can play a tune in a bar and it's cool.
Exactly.
Is it the same as a really practiced, wonderful pianist? No, it's not. It doesn't touch you or move you in the same way. It's player piano.
Yes.
To that quote, one thing I just want to add to that, if anyone on the call has been into the OpenAI playground area, so basically it's ChatGPT, but it's the playground area, which is kind of a light developer area. That randomness you talked about, there's actually a slider where you can, like, GPT-4 is set at like 0.7. I don't know what it's meant to be, 0.7, but randomness, like a little bit random, not very random. You can actually move the slider. It actually gets more random and kind of creative and weird. So you can adjust that slider. So to the point of in the future, will copywriters be more valuable? And to me, the answer to that is yes, to a certain group of clients.
And who would those be?
So the people like the people who really recognize the value of creative, like whether it is a big brand like, you know, Nike or Apple or Coca-Cola, who understand that basically their company depends on their brand and the creative has got to be, you know. I think if I'm just selling something like coffee makers, it's pretty generic, and I can probably do most of that writing with these models. But if I think it's going to be the very high-end creative people that survive, but it's also, I think, going to be the people who are practiced and experienced with AI and have learned how to create really good output from AI. And like I say, you have to work at that. So I think it's going to be a mix. I do think some copywriters and content writers will lose. They will lose their work. Like if you are, I was part of a startup many years ago, and it was a jewelry store, and I had to, my part of my job was writing the product descriptions for, you know, gold rings. It is the most tedious, boring work in the world. I'd be happy to hand that over to AI. You know, and AI can do it 100 times faster for a hundredth of the price. So there's certain types of writing that I think these models will take over. And some copywriters will probably lose some work as a result. But like I say, I think most of us have a choice as to how we want to respond to this. Like I say, if you go on your back foot and you have that, this is being done to me and there's nothing I can do about it attitude, you've probably got a problem. If you lean in a more proactive way and say, here is something very powerful and I'm going to figure out how to use this to my advantage, then I think the future looks a little rosier. But Bob, again, I want to push you on that because
Sure, fine.
I remember what you said because it kind of, I just remembered it because you said you're scaring people. And I didn't mention you, I didn't use that phrase, but I actually addressed that issue, like I think a few weeks later in one of my newsletters, as because I was saying I'm actually having trouble finding the balance. Like, yes, I am. I have a conflict of interest because I sell a program about writing with AI and emotional intelligence. So, yes, I want to pitch stuff. So, yes, if I scare people, maybe they'll buy my product. So, yes, guilty as charged. But on the other hand, it's like I as a service, out of love for our craft and love for my fellow copywriters, as a coach of decades, I mean, I really do care about people in our profession. From a place of caring, I'm saying, I want to warn you about this because if you do nothing, you're going to be toast. So it comes from a place, one, there's a conflict of interest because I'm trying to sell stuff. But on the other hand, there's this genuine desire that I want to raise a hand and say, hey guys, pay attention. This is important. You need to respond to this.
For me, it's when people push me, and you haven't pushed me into AI and say, you're crazy, you're stupid not to do it. I say, think of it this way. And it's not a fair analogy. There are companies that sell beautiful electric wheelchairs, and it's an easy way to get around, and those scooters you see in many malls. But I'm not going to buy one because I can walk fine. So that's why I've stayed away from AI. I already feel that, hey, I've been writing copy 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, 60 weeks a year, 60 hours a week, 51 weeks a year for over 40 years without missing it. If I don't know how to do this by now, I must be incredibly stupid. I don't feel the need for it. If I felt it could do something really helpful for me, I would use it. The one thing, there's two things it does, and I've mentioned one. The first is the concept vetting. That I find useful. The other one I use, I called the bad term, languaging. How do people talk about this? I know what the ideas are, but that's one thing I liked about focus groups. I don't think focus groups can tell you whether a product's going to sell or not, but you get to hear how consumers talk about the product and the problem it solves. So I like AI for that as well. So I'll say, what are parents of kids? Like I have a cousin, he's an adult now, who has cerebral palsy. What do the parents of the kids with cerebral palsy worry about most, or what do they discuss? That kind of thing. I know from my one cousin, but there's a lot more on that. So I languaging, the way people talk and think about it, and then to see if the idea has legs to build out a full promotion. That's how I use it.
So I'm going to come back in 2 points. One, Jim came up with a statement saying, "Bob, you're an exception. Like we're not all Bob Bly." All right. So your situation, because you will always have clients, you will always find clients who want 100% Bob Bly and no AI. Most copywriters, the majority of copywriters, are not in that position, right? We're not Bob Bly. We're not a nationally known brand in copywriting, as it were. So again, and I have to be careful. And I
Don't
guess
worry.
we have to be careful not to
Yeah.
try to think that everyone is in our position because they're not. So that, Jim, I thought is a valid point. The other point I was going to make, and I think I've already forgotten it, also having been doing this for 40 years, I'm running out of brain cells. What was I going to say? Oh, your point about listening. Hey, here's a tip. Here's something that I do. Let's say, and it could be a product, it could be a service, but let's say it's a product. We'll go back to coffee makers. I'll go to Amazon or Best Buy, I will copy 100 different product reviews. I will paste it as a block into GPT-4. And I'll say, based on the following, please write me a sentiment analysis for this product based on these reviews. And for humans, like 100 different reviews of a coffee maker, it's almost impossible for us to read them all and to sort it all out. This is one of the things these models do exceptionally well, is you can put in 1,000 reviews or transcripts from customer service calls or the text from chatbot engagements. You can gather all of this input from customers, plonk it into the model and say, "Write, create me a sentiment analysis." And it does it incredibly fast and incredibly accurately. Then this next step, to your point, Bob, is that I'll say, okay, within the positive side, what language are people using to express positive feelings about this product or service? Like, give me the language they're using. And it does. And I said, okay, now write me a draft of an email promoting this product, mirroring that positive language, using the language of happy customers. And it does. And it's not always great output, but it's often a very interesting start because I'm, to your point, I'm mirroring now. I'm actually finding the language of happy customers, and I'm mirroring that back to a new community of prospects.
Yeah, and
So
I think
stuff like that.
I wouldn't just make it positive. Sometimes it's the
Yeah,
negative.
yeah.
Like for example, with my cousin who has cerebral palsy, what key,
What's
Don
it?
Hauptman, the copywriter, he used to say when he was writing copy, he says, "Ask what's the number one problem that keeps your prospect up at night with worry." So the negatives are just as
Right.
with
Yeah.
some offers are just as useful. So I agree with that. Let me switch gears for a second, and then we can come back to that. One of the things, and again, this is just personal for me. Am I the only person? I think you do, but am I the only other person who thinks writing is actually fun? People are saying, "Oh, I can get AI to write, so I could do other things like fold my laundry and garden." I said, "I'd rather have robots and AI fold my laundry and do my garden, so I have more time to write."
I agree. I agree. Like again, I've been doing this for 40 years, and when I started out, I was doing print And I just had an old manual typewriter, a bit like that old guy up there.
Yep, me too.
And we used to spend 10 times as much time on every piece of work. There was a higher bar in terms of what was good enough. And I would sit down, and the craft of copywriting was a real thing. It was a craft that, and I used to cut out from the newspapers the, and I knew, like, from the big brands in the London newspapers I lived in. I started out in ad agencies in London, and I could look at the big brands, and I knew who the copywriters were just because I really studied that stuff. And I'd cut them out, and I'd go home, and I would read them line by line, and I'd copy them out line by line
As we all did back
with
then.
pen and paper. Because
Yeah.
I was looking for, I wasn't just looking at the idea, I was looking at the language. I was also looking at the rhythm, the cadence, the flow. And I best understood that by rewriting everything to the same column width by hand. So there is that craft, like the typography, the writing, like working with a designer where he'd tell me, Nick, I need that headline to be 5 characters shorter because we're going over to a second line. I'll say, hey, just make the headline font a little smaller. And he said, no, the font size is perfect. It's just your headline's 3 characters too long. So there was real craft. And then along comes, word processing, along comes, and it changes. And I'm not a Luddite. I embrace new technology, but I am also very aware that stuff has been lost. And part of it, and I still love to write, and I do every day. I don't think weekends, unless I'm deliberately on vacation, I write 7 days a week, and like you, I have done for over 40 years. Possible
That's what
exception,
that's what I do too.
possible exception of Christmas. So it is practice. It is a craft. It is valuable. It's what keeps me sane. I'd probably go completely nuts if I didn't write. It's probably a mental health thing for me that I have to write. But yeah, so again, yeah, for sure, I'm mindful of that when with AI, and that is part of like this technology. And if you talk to, I guess, anyone who thinks it through carefully, it is fascinating and it is terrifying. It is truly terrifying, and it's fascinating, and it's terrifying. So
Yeah,
I don't
I
know.
mean,
Part of me. I have a colleague who was also in the creative agency world, and I asked him about, what do you think about it? I hadn't spoken to him for months, and he said, oh, forget it. He said, I've given up that life. I bought a 50% share in an asphalt company. We lay parking lots and driveways. So he's just like, it's too scary for me. And he's, no,
people
I've
are
gotten
doing
to.
that. Some of the older people or even middle-aged people. I have a guy who was in a New York City copywriting club that we had decades ago. And he's in the Colorado. He runs a kayaking company. That's what he does. And other people have told me, another one, John S., he might be on this call, says, thank God I'm retired. I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. But my thing is, here's the thing. You said it's terrifying and it's great and it's fascinating. I feel to me, it's also to me a little sad. There was an episode of Star Trek where there's a, where,
Of course it was.
of course there was.
He's a
Well, there
Trekkie.
was an episode of Star Trek where a scientist, he was played by the actor who played Blackula in the movies. He had a very sonorous, rich voice. And he was installing an AI computer on the Enterprise to replace the 400 crew members and run the ship just with AI. And Captain Kirk wasn't happy about it. And Spock was saying, well, this is advancement. What's wrong? And this is the quote. I watched the episode the other day. Captain Kirk says to him, there are certain things men must do to remain men. Your computer, he tells the scientist, would take that away. Is there any of that in the world today? It makes me, I mean, I'm leaning into it, but on some level, it makes me sad that this is what we have today. That I live in a world where I hear about the words AI on my computer 75 times a day.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. But it's like, so I feel, hey, I'm closer to retirement than starting out, so I don't have to worry about this for the next 40 years. But I feel some sadness. I feel some fear. I feel some fascination. And that's
Do
why
all of those, yeah.
it's because of all of this that I say to people, do not be a victim of this. You have to lean into it and be, be in the driver's seat and use this, find a way to work this to your advantage. Because there's no, hey, again, it's like the horse and buggy people hating the fact the Model T Ford came along. You can hate it all you like, but the march of some technologies is just, you can't stop it. The dozens of people died in the Model T Ford in the first year. I think it's like 70 people in Detroit alone died because of the Model T Ford in the first year. First of all, the gas tank was under the passenger seat. The glass of the windshield was just regular glass and not safety glass. People were run over because the drivers didn't know how to drive. It was just a complete fiasco. Did it stop it? No, because the automobile is a transformational technology. The same with the computer, same with the internet, and it's the same with AI. We cannot. And when you look out there, there's people, even people building these models are scared, and they don't know where it's going. But they can't stop because they know no other people won't stop. So yeah, we really are kind of. It's like I don't know, where are we running to? Are we running to a cliff, or are we running to a better place?
So does
So
that
yeah.
mean, and this is maybe too high level, we should get back to copywriting, but does that mean we should consider slowing or halting it? Like Elon Musk has talked once about, hey, let's put a brake on AI development. What do you think?
Yeah, lots of there was a whole people who signed a declaration saying we should pause for 6 months, and then nobody paused for even a minute. It's the nature of capitalism. It's the nature of geopolitics. If America stops and China doesn't, Americans aren't going to be happy. So it is. It's one of those crazy things where people just go, keep going and going and going. So back to copywriting. One of the things is that, and I was talking about the craft and about.
Right.
I've yet to, and I've used the models a lot, and I've created some good content and some really good copy with a lot of deliberate, careful prompting. I have yet to see any of these models write a really good headline. Like a really good headline.
Funny you say that. I'll tell you something about. Do you remember before ChatGPT, a company Persado, Persado? I wrote an article. They were before ChatGPT. This was years ago. I wrote an article for Target Marketing Magazine. I think it's on my website. And what they did, they were more limited. They had AI writing subject lines. You could say headlines, but mainly subject lines. And it was constantly for subject lines, beating in results, in metrics, human copywriters. And I talked to the guy, I interviewed him for the article. He says, right now it only works with short bits of copy, because what we do is we computer analyzes the actual metric results of a bazillion headlines and comes up with a combination that can, that will increase the opens and clicks, but it's only 40, 50 characters. Beyond that, it can't write a coherent sentence or headline.
Yeah, it's like, hey, and that's I keep circling back, like most of what I write about and talk about now is adding that level of emotional intelligence, because to me that's the big differentiator between AI and humans, and it allows us to write better and to write in a way that is recognizably different from AI. And yeah, I think we still can be better at things like concepts. We can be better at headlines, and we can be better at. I remember, like, I think it was in the 60s when Volkswagen moved to the United States and they wanted to sell their bug, which was crazy because America was addicted to massive boat-like cars at the time.
Right.
And Doyle Dane Birnbach came up with this ad where it had a picture of a bug and the headline was the word lemon, which was crazy because a lemon is a bad car, right? It just said lemon, and the bug is the shape like a lemon. And
Yep.
that was the headline, lemon. Wouldn't AI do that? I mean, that worked. That launched. That it was so counterintuitive. It was such a weird way of trying to promote this ugly little car to Americans.
And
But it worked.
do you remember the headline of his second ad in that campaign?
No.
Think small.
Think small. Right. And Americans always think big, right? So
Right.
it was totally against the grain. It was counterintuitive and it worked gangbusters. So I don't think AI is there yet, and I'm not sure it will be. I'm not sure. I mean, it can be by going through a library of ads and picking one out and saying, "How about this?" Because it's copying something. But in terms of like neural capacity, can it think that way creatively? I don't think so. So yeah. No, I think so long as people lean into it and don't get into that kind of almost like victim mode, if you lean into it, into the driver's seat, I think there's opportunity. I think there's definitely hope. And like I say, yes, I'm terrified. But on the other hand, I'm kind of hopeful that we can do some good stuff with this. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm just hopelessly over-optimistic.
But you see it as a writing aid. It's not saying, okay, no more human writing books, novels, copy. AI will chat GPT will just do it when you prompt it. You see it as a companion and partner.
I use it, I see it as a collaborator.
Collaborator, that's the word I was looking for.
So don't see it as a software tool. Like typically a software tool, if you're working with Word, if you put in the same, control V, it will always insert something. If you get a control B, it will always make it bold. That's a piece of software. It's just a repeated task that is repeated over and over. These aren't like that. So yeah, I collaborate with these models. And no, I don't use them for everything. And I would never use them for any kind of prospect or client-facing communication. I've seen companies complain like crazy that they will put up a project looking for freelancers on freelancer.com or Upwork. And then they get all these proposals from copywriters saying, "Hey, I want to do this job for you." And they say, "You know what? All the proposals are almost identical because everyone's using AI to write the proposals." So the clients are saying, "No, if you write a proposal to me and you sound like the last 10 that I've seen, why would I give you the work?" So I'm thinking like really, in client facing, in prospect facing, like where you need to be you. Be you like that. Use the models, but don't use them. Don't. It's not an excuse to be lazy, like Bob says. Like don't use these. Think of these things as, oh, I can use this to write my copy while I go and mow the lawn or play golf. That's the kind of lazy approach, and I don't think it can work that way.
So I have someone in my newsletter group, that my subscriber, and when we announced this session, he wrote to me. He said his name is Dan. He said I won't give his last name. He said, in terms of writing style and flow, however, I find him that AI generated content is mostly lifeless and flawed. It occasionally hits the nail right on the head. But more often than not, it comes across as stilted and robotic, which is, I guess, to be expected from a machine. Do you think, and other people will argue, they say, hey, it's in its infancy. I mean, yesterday we had version 2.0, and now we have version 5.0. It's going to get a lot. What we see now is a fraction of the potential. So if it gets to that version 5, 7, 8, can it get to the point where it actually, no matter how good you and I are, just put us out of business and make us obsolete?
I think it can approach there, which is why something else I encourage people to do is put yourself out there. We can't all be Bob Bly, but be who you are
Take a
and
look. Who would
present.
want this, please? I mean, my.
Bob, you're America's most famous copywriter. It said so at McGraw Hill. You see, so you got that brand, right? You got that vibe going. So that insulates you. So, but I think anybody, like, I've started putting myself more. Like I have a new kind of business that I'm launching, and on the about page, it's not just a picture of the headshot, the business. It's a picture of me sitting on a log with my dog in the woods. It's like me as a person, like so. I'm not being like totally overt, saying, "Look at this, I'm a real person in the woods with my dog." But the impression I'm giving is I'm not just the business like headshot. I am a real living, breathing person. So I think we can all do that, is to present ourselves. And also, when I talk about emotional intelligence, part of this is the way in which you communicate with your clients and your prospects. And I think, like, given if, hey, I've got a friend who's a serial entrepreneur. He hires a lot of copywriters. And I asked him once, I said, "Hey, how do you find the best copywriters?" And he said, "I don't. I'm not interested in the best copywriters. I'm interested in the copywriters who are the best to work with." That may be the fourth best copywriter, but if he's the best to work with, that's the one I choose. And I think we can be in a similar situation when competing with AI as copywriters. Is that, do our clients always just want to interface with an AI model, or will it actually miss the personal connection of the pleasure of working with and interacting with a real living human being? And I think they will. And you made the point earlier, Bob, that idea of the kind of backlash thing, and also, people wanting to work with real writers. I think they will, because that human connection is that. I don't know. Do we always just want to be working with robotic systems? I don't think we do.
Okay. Another one of my readers, Keith, you know who you are, Keith, the engineer, said to me, the expansion.
I know Keith.
Oh, now you're blown. You better go Leaf of Bolivia. We all
Well,
know
if you
Felix.
say Keith, an engineer, then I know you.
So he
I
says the
can.
expansion of AI and the flood of marginal content is going to make human to human authenticity stand out. Do you think that's true? Some people, you think yes?
I do. It's what I was saying to say. I was what I was trying to say, but Keith said it better and more succinctly.
So,
I do. I do. I think there is an opportunity for us to sell our humanity to say, hey, wouldn't you rather interact with a human? It's weird. Like, I get mixed up. Like, I'll be prompting and reprompting one of these models, and I will feel this moment of like embarrassment, like, hang on, this is the 10th rewrite I've asked, as if it were a human. Like, if I asked a human, can you rewrite this a 10th time, they'll probably get a little bit ticked off with me. And I suddenly found myself feeling this, and I thought, that's ridiculous. It doesn't matter how many times I ask it. But it's almost like I want to treat, like, I'm missing the human touch. Like, I'm missing that feeling of working with a human.
You had also said this. This is I'm quoting you. So now we know who we're talking about. Nick says you. I believe you said this today or yesterday. While companies may love the speed and economy of using AI to generate their marketing materials, are they prepared to accept the damage, your word, done to their brands by mediocre creative? In the near term, I think we'll see a surge in the automation of marketing, then followed by a pullback of automation as companies see the damage being done to their brands. You want to elaborate? I think I get
Well,
what.
that's my guess. That's my best guess. So WPP, which is the world's largest advertising agency group, and it owns, agencies like Ogilvy and Wunderman Thompson and stuff like that. So it owns 100 large agencies. They are doing a deal with, signing a deal with Google, where they're going to integrate Google's Gemini AI with inside the creative departments of all the world's top 100 agencies. And they're going to require those creative departments to use the model for generating images and text. So again, old romantics like me and Bob, who remember the way agencies used to be, the idea of Ogilvy and Mather depending on, on Gemini, an AI tool to do creative, is slightly horrifying. But it is irresistible, because doing good creative with really highly paid individuals is incredibly expensive. So if you look at the math and you say, well, hang on, we can produce 100 times the output for literally a hundredth of the price, that is like, it's the nature of capitalism, right? It's irresistible. It's like suddenly your quarterly profits are going to go through the roof. But yeah, I think there will come a time where brands will say, hang on, at Coke, they'll be saying, hang on, we're sounding just like Pepsi. Or, you know what I mean? It's like what I call the sameness trap. If you're using the same models, the same prompt libraries, the same templates, then you will inevitably begin to sound the same, which is a disaster. It's the last thing you want as a brand. So I think companies will love it for the economy, the scale of economy, like because it is financially, it's irresistible, but there will be a pullback, I think. So again, our job, I think, is to find those clients and nurture those clients who don't want to sound the same. They don't want to fall into that sameness trap. And like I say, this is where we kind of weave emotional intelligence into artificial intelligence. It always has that kind of messy human feel. Humans are messy. We're messy, and these models aren't very messy. Sometimes we like people because of their, I don't know, their flaws, their weaknesses, abilities, their quirks. It's the messy edges we're attracted to. And these models don't have that, at least not a human version of that.
So using ChatGPT as you do, as you use it, do you think for you personally and other people you're teaching and working with, it the riding the exercise machine makes them stronger copywriters, or does it actually dull their mind? You know, there's a fear that, you know, in that quote from Einstein, that if machines do everything, we're not thinking anymore. And I think it was Isaac Asimov who said, thinking is one of the chief glories of humankind.
Right. And also, like people like us, we think by writing a lot of the time. So I think it very much depends on individual approaches. Like I am mindful of what you say. I'm aware of the benefits and the weaknesses, and I use it in a way where I am careful not to exclude myself as the writer. But I use AI a lot, and I find it remarkable. So in my own world, I've kind of figured out how I use it, to what degree I use it, and how I protect and maintain my own abilities and integrity as a writer. More broadly, what's going to happen out there in the economy? What's going to happen to knowledge workers, not just us, but to accountants, to lawyers, to everyone else doing knowledge work? There will be a huge impact. And that'll kind of be at a societal level. It will be this impact, and I don't know what that's going to be. There will be some positives, there'll be some negatives, and I don't know how it will net out. And I don't think anyone does, least of all the people who are building these things. It's nuts. It's crazy, Bob.
So we have our listener, John, saying, "Hey, I like this, but it's where I am. It's dinner time. It's later, so I'm gonna have to bug out." Are we recording this? I think we are, right?
We are actually, we're almost at the top of the hour. So I am going to, Bob and I, we're going to pitch you something now, as is our nature as direct response copywriters. And we would not be complete without a little pitch. So Jody's going to paste into the chat. Bob has his best kept copywriting secrets ebook that
Yeah, I
he's
have what I'm
putting.
offering is a simple ebook, the world Bob Bly's Best Kept Copywriting Secrets. And what it is it's all my power techniques learned over, or the best of my power techniques learned over the decades for writing the strongest copy I can with no assistance from AI. It was all done
Perfect.
pre-chat.
And before my pitch, someone just put up Reed Play a Piano by Kurt Vonnegut.
I love Play a Piano.
I have read everything by Kurt
I've read
Vonnegut
everything.
more than once. He had like a huge influence on me when I was younger. I actually got to meet him in London. It was amazing.
That's great. Let me just throw in one thing. I was at an engineering society training their marketing people on how to write copy. And I'm giving the example that you should write simply. And I say, like Kurt Vonnegut, and I see blank looks in the audience. I say, who here has read anything by Kurt Vonnegut? Out of 25 people, no hand went up. I said,
Oh
well,
my
who
goodness.
here's heard of him? Nobody.
They're reading, all right? Reading. That's important too. Anyway, look, I got to pitch my thing. I got to pitch my
Okay.
thing. So
Yes.
Jody is also pasting into the chat, I think, and hope, a link to my course, which is called Future Proof Copywriting. And it's all about combining AI with emotional intelligence. And there is a little coupon code there, Bob20, where you can save 20% on that. If you just use the coupon code in checkout, and you'll save 20%.
So,
Hey, but
John.
today, coming back to Kurt Vonnegut, in terms of humans and connections, I was part of a kind of group on Twitter, a private group on Twitter, and I didn't really know anyone, and I had no connection with someone. And somebody came up, this lady came up, and she mentioned Kurt Vonnegut. And I said, yay, me, moi, I love it, Kurt. And she was like, oh my goodness. And we got into this conversation about Kurt Vonnegut. And it turns out we're a similar age, and she was also very kind of moved and influenced by him when she was in her late teens, as was I. And there was a bond there. We became friends within, this short conversation about a shared interest in a particular author. So I'm getting kind of off topic, but this human connection that we're talking about,
I'm going to put you on the
it
spot. What was Kurt Vonnegut's number one piece of wisdom he had dispensed about life? He
oh
had a
goodness.
famous line.
I'll recognize it when you say it.
He
Say it.
said, "God damn it, you've got to be kind."
Exactly right. God damn it, you've got to be kind. Oh man, he was such a, and I did, I got to meet him. He was doing a reading in London,
I
and I
wish I had. Yeah, he's
got
great.
to chat with him afterwards, and like just such a, The Sirens of Titan, love that one.
They're all good. That, yeah. I guess Slaughterhouse-Five was his breakout.
That's a little bit dark, that one, but
Yeah, but that's what made him the superstar
yeah.
bestseller. So, Jody,
Anyway, Anyway, so we're gonna open up. We've hit the top of the hour. We've done our little promotion. Bye, as we would say. And yeah, now Jody is going to feed me and Bob some questions. Bob, we haven't really landed a punch yet. So maybe when the questions come out, you know, bruise me.
Yes. So the first question was, would there be a replay available? We will do our best.
Yes, there will.
Okay.
We are recording.
Correct. So next we've got Simon, who says, I'm learning copywriting. I was watching Stefan Georgi saying that you shouldn't become a copywriter due to AI. Is he right?
So, Nick, you want to answer? To me, he's not right. People are saying don't become a copywriter because there's AI and it's an obsolete profession. I think Nick's going to agree with me. No, it's not. It's a strong, viable profession. Things always change in professions. So over the 40 plus years I've been doing it, as long as Nick, some things are better, some things are worse, and it all washes out in the laundry. It's still viable. It's still good. To me, the most important thing is it still fun? I don't know why people would be a writer unless they're having fun. And to me, it still is. And you can have what there aren't that many jobs where you can have fun every day, be your own boss, set your own hours, and make. Now some of these guys are making $1 bazillion. I'm not a you know, I don't ever say I'm a bazillionaire, but you know, I make a nice, you know, comfortable living. We want for nothing, you know. I'm not super rich, but I'm doing fine. And my definition of success, I don't know about yours, Jody or Nick. I always said success for me is doing what I want to do, when I want to do it, with whom I want to do it, and being paid very, very well. And for me, copywriting satisfies that.
Yeah.
And I think it can continue for you, other people, for decades in that regard.
So my answer to that would be, it's certainly an interesting time to start a career in copywriting. And like I've been trying to say a few times, I think it entirely depends on mindset. You've got to, hey, this is like riding surfing on some massive wave, right? The massive wave is AI. And you can either surf it and, like Bob, love every moment and be shouting and screaming as you surf through the wave. Or you can have the wave, you know, fall on top of you and crush you into the beach.
Hmm.
And I do think there's a choice. There's a choice we can make. Am I going to ride this shouting and screaming into the future? Or am I going to let it happen to me? And no, you don't want it to happen to you. You want to be in the driver's seat, or you want to be surfing the top of the wave.
Okay, moving on. We've got a question for Nick. John would like to know, are some niches more vulnerable than others when it comes to AI one day dominating the future of copywriting? For example, I'm in the travel niche and a lot of my writing is very personal. AI can only list the top 10 monuments or whatever.
Right. And that's interesting because we won't go into SEO because that's a whole different bag of mice. Yeah, I think it will impact. I don't know about industry niches, but you're right. Most things, there's going to be a personal way of approaching it, like whether it's travel or whether it's finance or health or whatever. There will be always that kind of human element you can touch on. I think rather than impacting particular niches, I think it will impact particular types of writing. I think AI will get to writing good enough content before it gets to writing good enough copy.
Exactly.
I've said already, product descriptions, who cares? Let AI do it. It's the most boring work in the world. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that AI is already doing. But what do you think? Do you think some of this?
That's exactly what I tell people. I give this example. I said, I have one of my clients is a lawn and gardening company. And I don't do this for them, but they have their content writers will have to write things like an e-newsletter. 5 ways to get your lawn ready for spring. I can do that. Yeah, and they're in trouble. I hear from I don't mean it as a derogatory term, but I hear from lower level content writers or content writers who are writing C-level text that they're being replaced. But on the other hand, I wrote a promotion, a direct mail package for a company that sends messages to pet owners who have lost, who their dog has died. It's highly charged, highly emotional, and I wish I could share the letter with you, but and maybe I'll ask the client if I can, and we'll distribute it to the group. But AI can't do that. It doesn't get that. I did
So
another
it's
promotion.
like I said, like AI can do the kind of the blunt form of emotion, like rush, rush, hurry, hurry, desire, fear, all that kind of stuff. But
Exactly.
it can't do that nuance.
It
Because
can't do
it's never
nuance.
lost a pet. It's never lost a pet. Last time we had a pet put down, I cried like a baby. It's like, so an AI has never had that. It may have read about it, but it doesn't know what that feels like.
So I always say the thing that AI is weakest at and we humans are best at are emotion, stories. AI has plenty of stories, but it hasn't, as you say, experienced them. We have original stories. And to write that pet letter, I began my letter saying, recently, our beloved Nova Scotia duck tolling retriever Bailey passed away. I mean, like you said, I cried. And it just was a very strong, and then we related it to the product. So, emotion, it does well. And also, AI doesn't do deep thought well. It can borrow ideas from other people, but it hasn't cogitated on the meaning of what it's feeding you. Like a
I
lot
mean,
of people say to me, oh, well, AI can mimic the emotion. I say, well, why would I want to mimic it when I have it myself?
well, it's like I was saying that email I wrote where I asked it to open with a story, and it did. And then I thought, hang on, I've got a
Yeah, I
process.
got stories.
I can replace that.
Exactly.
And it just makes it better. Okay, Jody, next one.
Okay, Tiffany has another one for Nick. If you input your own writing into GPT for it to identify gaps or issues, are you at all concerned about that writing forming or informing part of an aggregated whole somewhere else down the
I don't care. People
line?
like people copy my stuff. I've been copying my stuff for ever since the internet arrived. I'm aware of it, but no, it doesn't. It doesn't bother me. Like it doesn't bother me. It's like rain falling out of the sky. Nothing I can do about it. So, I just whip it.
100% agree. Okay, great. So Dan would like to know, would you agree that AI output lacks panache? If you ask it to write something poetic, it gives you something really cheesy. If you ask it to write an engaging story, it struggles to be original. These are elements of good copy. Do you think it will remain this way, or is it likely to improve?
I think that the thing you can do right now is, like I say, practice that guitar. Like practice using the instrument, because if you do, you'll find actually that the limitation sometimes, not it's not always true, but very often the limitation is not the model, what the model can do. Very often the limitation is the series of prompts you gave it. So I can train a I probably write. Like for particular projects and clients, I have presets. I have speak as, like I'm instructing the speak as an expert in ABC. Here's your background. Here are your qualifications. This is what your voice is like. You're authoritative, but you're not too distant. You sound, available to a reader. So I'm doing this long description of you, the AI, speak as this. Here is your audience. Long example. Here are five examples of previous emails that have hit the spot and done really well. And here's another 10 follow-up emails that I did that also worked. So I can put in hundreds of words of briefing and context into these models. So I'm working it, right? I'm really working the. I'm not trying to do just a 5-word prompt. I'm really giving it a ton of information. And the out. If you do that, if you put the work into the prompt sequence, and you can do it. And like I say, you can do it. I tend to do it like I'll do the first prompt if I like the output, but it's like, can you make that a little same again, but a little more conversational? It'll do it. And it's like, too much, man. Dial it back 50% and it'll do it. So I do very detailed prompting. I do sequences of prompting, And then the output can be surprisingly good if you put the work in. To which Bob will say, "Well, Nick, all that time and effort, why don't you just write the
That's
thing
what I
down?"
was just thinking. You
See,
answer,
I
answer
know what
that.
Bob, I know what Bob's
Now,
thinking.
you're getting it. Because answer that. That's what I think. People say, do this. I say, in the time I could do that, I could write it and have fun. I don't want to do that prompting stuff.
Bob, so here's my answer to that is I mentioned the word preset. I will, for a particular project or client, I will put in the work to write that long prompt with all the context. I will
Right.
save it in a drop down as a preset. So next project comes along, I don't have to rewrite anything. I just drop down, click project name, preset goes in, output comes out. And so that really helps. So but again, the only point I was making is that when you have disappointing output, it may be a limitation of the model, but probably more likely it's a limitation of the prompting you put into it. No disrespect to anyone except Bob.
All right, Nick, Ed would like to know if you can share your AI tech stack, such as Jasper, et cetera, and how you use them most successfully.
I use GPT-4 most of the time. I'm now using GPT-4o, which is Omni. And the good news there is that it's free. So it used to be that GPT-4 cost you $20 a month. And now you have the GPT-4o and it's freely available. I will sometimes use Claude 3. I will sometimes use the Gemini from Google. I will use Meta from Facebook, meta.ai. That's pretty good. I don't generally use things like Jasper. I haven't been using those tools. I just use the frontier models, these new models that are coming out. Because behind something like Jasper is usually a collection of models that they use in the background. Jasper is a little bit different because they use more than one model. Most of those copywriting platforms, it's actually just a user interface on top of GPT-4 or equivalent. So basically, what you're buying is a different interface, same tool. Jasper is a little bit different, but basically, I just use those frontier models, and 9 times out of 10, I'm just using GPT-4. I'm also in the. Jody, I didn't know you had a dog.
So
Sorry,
sorry.
best part, wagging
So
the tail.
sorry. He's got.
No, it's good. I like puppies. So yeah, that's my answer to that. I don't have. I could. I don't want to spend the time figuring out 20 different technologies or platforms. When something dramatically improves on GPT-4o, then and if it's not GPT, then if something is dramatically better, I will move. But basically, I'm investing my time and my self-training into one model so I can make the best use of my time. So
Great.
my answer
Carol
to
would
that.
like to know, what about privacy issues like client copy, ideas, information you input to AI to be our assistant, so to speak? So much work to redact everything out ourselves and be sure we've done it completely. How can we be sure AI won't steal or misuse this information?
So the whole privacy issue is a good one. If you go to Steve Slowmwhite's LinkedIn page, he is giving you a kind of free download of his AI policy document that he's put up on his website. Because that's something you want to, you can, st again, this is part of the being in the driver's seat. You can step up to clients and prospects and say, "Hey, here is my AI policy. Here's what I will do and I won't do. Here's how I use it and here's how I won't use it." And speak to that whole issue of privacy. Certainly within companies and enterprises right now, adoption of AI is bottom up. Like most employees are using AI even when the companies tell them not to, because they just want to, because it's so useful. And a lot of employees are coming up with great use cases, but they're not sharing them because they're scared of telling their bosses they're using AI. This is an evolution in the industry. In time, it'll be top down. Like the company will say, "Okay, we're going to use this tool. This is the one tool everyone will use. Here are the guardrails. Here are the databases you may access. Here, this is private customer data. You may not, the AI will never access this, these silos of data because there's privacy issues there." So there are big issues around privacy, and I think as a copywriter or a content writer, if you step up to your client and say, look, here's my AI policy, here's my position on privacy, and also say, like, please don't give me, don't give me anything where I could step, I could overstep on a privacy issue. Don't give me that information.
I have a question for Nick. The question is, if you're using AI as you, if I was using AI as you advocate, I was one of your students or trainees, do I keep this, do I proactively tell the client how great it is? Do I keep it a secret? What's my position on does Bob or Fred or Nick use AI or not?
I would go 100% transparency.
Okay. Why?
One, because it puts you in the driver's seat. Yes, I'm on top of this. Yes, I have a policy. Yes, I'm engaged with this. Yes, I can. Hey, so many companies are still kind of uncertain of this. So if you can step in and say, I've got your back. I understand this. I can help you with this. That gives you a much more powerful position, right? So lean into it, learn about it. Be transparent about it and step up as a helping hand for prospects and clients, saying, I know this is crazy times and you're probably struggling how to integrate this into workflows within your organization, but let's talk because I can help you with this stuff. I know this stuff.
And I'm going to ask Nick one more question, Jody, before we go to the next. What do you personally think of, should I use, call myself a prompt engineer, or is that a bad term?
I think it was really popular at the beginning. And I see I'm seeing it used less and less because people know it's a little bit. And it's like prompt engineering was almost this thing separate from the process of work. It's like a separate thing somehow, and it shouldn't be.
Right.
The way you learn to use prompts should be integrated in your daily day-to-day practice working on particular projects with particular models. It's not like you can learn prompt engineering as this kind of separate
Right.
skill set. It should be integrated. And I've seen so many kind of books and lists of here are 10 prompts, insert company name or insert product name here. It's like, it's like this is like somebody's idea of a shortcut. It's like a lazy, it's like the lazy way. So no, that whole idea of being a prompt engineer with a prompt library and all that stuff. I mean, I share a list of prompts, but I make it clear this is just your starting point. This is just to break the white page, but engage with, have that collaborative mindset, that collaborative attitude of going back and forth. That's how you prompt. It's not just going to a library and copy and pasting stuff in.
Got it. Jody, do we have more?
Tom would like to know if AI was prompted to write in the style of Bob Bly, couldn't it mimic his emotional content?
It could. I could take Bob's top 10 long form sales letters. I could paste them into GPT-4, and I'm gonna say, "Hey, I want to sell this gold bullion product. I want you to mimic, not copy. I want you to mimic the structure, the tone, the voice, the cadence, the sequence, of Bob Lye, see attached." And it will. And it will, it'll come back, and I'll get a sales letter that for most people will sound like Bob wrote it. Sorry, Bob.
No, not a problem.
So long as
Interesting
you give it,
to
so long as you give it that text, that text. So I've got to give it. One of the things a lot of people don't do with their prompts is give examples, and giving examples is really, really helpful to these prompts. So yeah, I can. Hey, I can. You're getting close to be able to writing a book like this. It's like. Yeah, there's 10 books by such and such an author. I want another book by that author on a different topic. So again, problems, we got copyright issues, we've got all kinds of issues faced coming up.
Now, Dan had just asked and made a comment saying, Dan, Nick, it doesn't matter. You're overselling it. It doesn't
Yeah.
matter how much you prompt it. It's not going to sound that good. But you would disagree with Dan, right?
I would disagree because I've created output where I did a live demo a few weeks ago creating a blog post, and basically my audience of writers at the end were horrified because the final post really did sound like it was written by a person, and it was really good and it was really engaging. So I would challenge that person to stick with it, because you can, like I say, I scared the willies out of my audience. I didn't mean to,
But you often
because
say you don't want to do that. You don't want to scare them.
I do. I want to scare them into taking a positive stance on this. I want to
Okay.
scare people into paying attention so they can get in the driver's seat and they can get ahead of this and lean into this.
And similar to the last comment we had, Mark had also posted. He said, "No, Nick, AI just writes fluff. That's all it can do." But you don't agree with that,
Did
right?
someone really say that, or is that a feint? Are you
No, wait,
just
remember it popped up earlier? It's in the stream that's popping up. He said,
that
"AI just
in
writes
terms
fluff."
of fluff, that after my first like couple of weeks, that has not been my experience.
I
If
thought you'd say that, yeah.
I see fluff, I know almost instantly that the problem is sitting in my seat.
And Mark says, "Not me, Mark." So he didn't do it. So you're absolved. Okay, Jody, we have any others?
Yes, Mike says, or asks, since what AI writes or responds with is a derivative of text it has been fed, don't we get to a point where AI writes or responds with output that's derived from prior AI output? Doesn't this dilute the uniqueness or even the value of AI over time?
So this is what they call synthetic data. So this is the data that is used, that is created by AI and then goes back into the data set. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
And Mike goes on to say, to clarify, my assumption is that the AI-derived output is published to be later consumed by AI.
And so it will become part of that data set. So
Correct.
you got human data and you got the synthetic data. So to the first half of that, as humans, we do the same thing. We'll read Vonnegut, we'll read Asimov, we'll read Bob Bly on copywriting, and we will be influenced by that, and they will influence that. And so, in a sense, as human writers, we're doing the same thing. We're deriving from the people that we've learned from and that we admire. And then I might write something that was influenced by my love of Bob and Kurt Vonnegut, and someone then may take that. So in a sense, that this process is similar to what we do as humans. But there is the underlying that there is a good point, and I don't think anyone has quite figured it out. Also, keep in mind that a lot of writers write rubbish as well. A lot of human writers write complete rubbish as well. So the human data set is not exactly pure. It's not all wonderful, perfect writing and good writing. We're pretty imperfect as well, and I have days where I write output that is definitely not my best, and other days I do better.
And that's a
There's a lot of
way,
nonsense written as well.
yeah, I've been considering using it for that. I haven't done it yet. Occasionally, I too have assignments that are just not coming out the way I want. And I can plug away on them sometimes with difficulty and get there, but I'm thinking, I don't like what I've done. And maybe I need to take your course because I don't know how to do it. I should plug it into ChatGPT and have it give me alternate ideas. Is that a good use for it? You're
Well,
working.
sometimes I'll be very explicit. I'll say, I feel this doesn't feel quite right to me. Like there's maybe a transition that's not working, but or it's feeling a little bumpy. Like, can you identify where you think the problem might be and provide an alternative? And it doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. And it's like, wow, okay, I
I have
didn't
to
see
try
that.
that. Thank you.
Okay, Dan asks, do you think there could be a big public backlash against AI? The latest Apple ad flopped as it showed lots of musical instruments, art tools, nostalgic memorabilia, etc., being
Yeah.
crushed. They had to pull the ad due to the backlash.
That was pretty tone deaf of them. It was ridiculous. Who would imagine
She
that?
also goes on to say, have you ever read a piece of content and thought, I wish that sounded less human?
No.
Interesting thought, so I'll
That's a,
share that.
I like that. I like that quote. I like
That
that. Are you going to steal that or shall I? Good quote. Who's that from? That was a good quote.
was Dan as well.
Done. All right. So sorry, and I completely that was so good I forgot the first part of the
What was the
question.
first part again, Jody?
Yeah.
Hang on 1 second. Let me go back to it. Do you think there could be a big public backlash against AI? And
Yeah,
it refers
I think
to
there
the
will be,
latest Apple ad that flopped.
and it's not just us as writers. Like I say, all knowledge workers, whether you're an accountant or you're a lawyer or anywhere in knowledge work where, this is really good at analyzing huge data sets. It's really good at so yeah, there will be lots of professions that are severely disrupted, and millions of people will either have their jobs changed or will lose jobs, and there'll be other jobs created. But yes, it'll be disrupted, very disruptive. And yes, I'm sure there will be some some public reaction to this, and I totally get it. And like I say, I feel sometimes I get up in the morning and I'm one part excited and two parts nervous. Other days I'm, one part nervous and two parts excited. Like, I'm not blind to the societal impact here and the impact on me and on my life and on my work and on my retirement. I'm aware of it, which is like, I keep saying the same thing, is like, that's why I want to stay in the driver's seat. I want to ride the wave so that I have some measure of control of this.
And as an aside, for one of my publishers, a smaller publisher, I'm writing a book called AI Apocalypse, which is a directory or a
Not
guide.
dramatic at all, Bob. Not
No,
dramatic at
no, no. It's not about copywriting. It's a guide to AI, how it's portrayed in movies, comic books, science fiction novels, short stories, science fiction television. And what you find is overwhelmingly, as you might imagine, it's all negative. It says we're going to be screwed. You almost It's very hard to find even one that's fairly positive. So yeah, we have long thought for a century or decades at least that AI is not going to be good for us in the long haul. And I do think about that.
I mean, I think about it too, but it's like when people ask me, "Hey Nick, where do you think this is going to be in 5 years?" I give the only honest answer I can, which is, "I've no idea. I
That's what I
really
say too.
don't."
Have you read Ray Kurzweil, the AI writer? He
I've
came up
read
with the
some of his
term
stuff. I don't think I've read
Kurzweil.
one AI.
He came up with the term singularity to say the
Yes.
singularity is the point in time where suddenly it's almost like AI self-awareness. Suddenly AI is aware of itself and has overtaken human thinking. And the question is, when is it going to be the singularity? Is it going to
Right.
be in 100 years from now, 10 years, or Thursday? And we don't know.
Yeah, it's yeah, scary, exciting. What can I say?
Got another question for you, Nick. Says, I'm about to begin my copywriting journey. Should I learn copywriting and combine it with AI in the process from the very beginning, or should I learn old school human writing only first and then add AI tools? How would either of those roads impact the quality of learning?
I would ideally I would do both, because you don't want to fall behind on AI, but nor do you want to use AI in the kind of lazy way so that you never actually learn the craft, the beautiful craft of copywriting. So I double down like on both. I think to be a great copywriter, you need to put in the time to learn the craft of copy. And I use the word craft to indicate a respect for copywriting. The craft, learn the craft of copywriting, but I don't think you can say, oh, okay, I'm going to do learn copywriting for 6 months and then I'll have a look at AI. I'm not sure you have that time available. I think you need to be learning both at once. So this means get Bob's ebook and get my course and read them at the same time.
There you go. All right. Another one is, what is your process to humanize first draft AI written content, especially so that it passes testing in originality?
I was, like I say, I'll give it examples and things, stuff like that. Hey, I got to say one thing. We're approaching two,
We are.
like the bottom of the, we have, I'm not sure whether this cuts off automatically at the bottom of the, like at 2:30, in which case we've only got 2 minutes,
Yeah, we
or
probably
we
do.
can just carry on. Hopefully we can carry on a few extra minutes.
Okay.
If we're cut off in 2 minutes, thank you.
Yeah,
Goodbye.
thank you
It's
in
been
advance.
great. But hopefully,
If AI eliminates us.
yeah, if AI eliminates us in 2 minutes, thank you very much for joining us. But I think we're okay. I think we can roll over a bit. So let's keep them coming.
Okay. How do you go about attributions? Do you insert a caveat that informs the reader AI was used for research purposes, or does that not matter? Does it
It,
matter?
so a couple of things. One
Yeah.
is, like, if I'm writing something with any kind of, and I write some stuff about natural health, and I always want to cite references, so I ask these tools to cite the references. But then I always check them. I always click through on the references to make sure that they're legitimate, because sometimes they're not. So you've got to be careful there. So that's citing references in your work. So again, give me the question again.
Oops, I'm sorry. Let me go back. What is your process to humanize first draft AI written content, especially so that it passes testing and originality?
Right. So I will take I will lead with emotion sometimes. So I will explicitly ask the model to write in a particular voice, or I'll give it some background or some examples. So it's not like I'm saying, do the AI, and then I will add the human touch later. I can actually start the prompting process by saying, hey, this is an emotional topic, and I want to touch people and I want to reach people, and like say the dog, the loss of a loved pet. So I might be emotionally explicit right at the beginning of the prompting sequence and lead with emotion there.
Okay. John has to say, a friend of mine works in HR. If they get 500 applicants for a job, only AI reads the resumes and copy letters after it's prompted to find four or five keywords. Then AI picks the top 10, and only that small list actually goes to the human in HR. Personal letters won't get you that job, according to my HR friend. That's the sad part. Not a
Well,
question, but an
HR has been
interesting.
sickening for years. Nick, let me answer this one if you don't mind. Yeah, I mean,
No,
when
no,
we,
no, 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 no.
yeah, shut up, Nick. No, but when we were kids, right? When we were kids, you would write a letter, and no matter if you didn't get the job or not, you get a personal letter back. Now people tell me they apply for 2,000 jobs, 200 jobs online, and no one even acknowledges that they did it. So HR has gone in the toilet. I don't care, AI or not.
Also, people are not only being hired by AI, they're being fired by AI. So
Yeah,
they'll
the
be
other.
automatically seeing your productivity and stuff. So again, back to the old man moment. When I got my first job in advertising, one of the reasons I chose advertising is I had no qualifications other than high school. So I wanted a job that would interest me, would pay well, but required no qualifications. So I wrote 20 letters to 20 ad agencies in London. I got three interviews and one job offer. And it turned out all right in the end because it turned out I was quite good at copywriting. But the guy who hired me, I went back to him like a year later and I said, why did you hire me? I was totally unqualified. I didn't have anything to show you. And he said, yeah, but he said, you seemed like an interesting guy. You had done some interesting, weird stuff since you left school. So we thought we'd just give you a shot. Because back then, like being slightly unusual or slightly weird was a thing that agencies looked for. Which is the absolute opposite of what you're talking about with HR being automated by artificial intelligence. So I would never have got that job if an AI had interviewed me. I just got it because this guy was tickled by how I'd been spending the 3 years since I left school. So yeah, I like that is horrifying. And it's even more horrifying the idea of being fired by an AI and where there's no one you can talk to about it.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine one day the AI is controlling your computer? A voice comes up on the screen. Sit down, Nick. Tell us, how long have you been with us? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? And you're being set up. It's
Yeah.
horrible.
Not good.
Nick, Mark would like to know, do you watch every episode of Mad Men?
I've never seen it.
You know what is weird? I think I watched it one episode. So I was at the tail end of Mad Men, I guess, the London version, and it was fun. It was a glorious time. It was you go to work in the morning, we'd work really hard for 4 hours, and then we'd have at least 4 hours for lunch in the local bar or restaurant. And then we'd do 2 more hours, and then we'd go back and get drunk for the rest of the day. So yeah, good
All right, you've
times.
got a few more, it looks like, just from Dan here. I hear all AI LLMs described as tools rather like a calculator for writing. Is this accurate, or are they best described as a service? I think you touched on this earlier, Nick. A service to outsource thinking and writing, or does it depend on how you use them?
Like I said earlier, I describe them as an instrument. You'd
I like
learn to play an
that.
instrument
That's
the way
cool.
you'd learn to play the piano or a guitar or a violin. The more time you put in, the better you'll be.
And until Nick said that, I didn't think of it as a tool, but I did think of it as outsourcing thinking, which I found, a very upsetting idea because think, as you said, we've said a couple of times, thinking is the fun of it.
Yeah.
And to
But
me,
it's also like on a good day when I'm working well with it, it really does almost feel like I have like in my early days where I was sitting across the table with my art director designer friend, where you're actually two people collaborating and trying to create something better than you would have done on your own.
good
On
analogy.
good day and on good days that works. It's like I'm working with a super smart collaborator.
Good analogy.
Okay, it looks like we've got one more. Again from
Okay.
Dan, have you heard of the Ouroboros theory that LLMs
Dan, you know it's $5 a question, right? Just the
will
same.
We got to
that
pay him.
LLMs will deteriorate over time as they feed on their own output. What's your take on that? I've been using Chat GPT extensively for more than a year now, and I'm pretty sure the overall quality has declined already.
That's not been my experience so far. And like I say, humans create terrible content as well. Just read an English newspaper. Or read the Daily Mail or the
Dan
Mirror
says that's a bargain, Nick.
whatever. All
Right.
right.
I
That's
think
it,
that should cover
guys.
it.
Thank you, everyone. We loved having you here. Nick and Jody, thank you so much.
Thanks,
And
everyone.
we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take
Bye-bye.
care.
Right. And everyone is leaving. Bob's running. Bob's gone.
Bob's gone. He's out of
Out
here.
of here. It's just you and me. And lots of people saying thank you, which is always, I like that. I got to open up the chat. I just got to see some thank yous. Great call. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're very welcome. Everyone's still here saying thank you. You are very welcome. I enjoy this. Bob
Thanks,
enjoys this.
everyone.
And look, Jody's smiling. Jody's puppy. Jody's, what kind of dog is it you have?
He's a terrier mix. I apologize. He's very attached to
Not at
me. Had I
all.
locked him out from the start because no one else was home, he would have been scratching at the door the entire time to come in.
Dogs are always welcome. Always
Yeah, he's definitely my shadow, so.
welcome. So, lots more thanks. So, yeah, you're very welcome, everyone. That's very, very good. Very cool. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Jodie.
Excellent.
I will end this for everyone. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Bye, everyone.
Take care.